Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, 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 hello. My increasingly wonderful, you've always been wonderful audience. Once again, thank you for being there for me to talk with. And thank you for beginning now this new communication stream to me. I'm really enjoying getting emails at Breggin Live, Breggin Live at hotmail.com. It's really good. I want to start with the idea, though, that I can't be doing referrals, which is what you most want in many ways, because I can't vet people. I'm not in a position to. Do go to my secondary website and empathictherapy.org and look for the therapy list. And those are people who, you know, feel they want to be associated with me, and they are listing themselves on that website, through us, but we're not vetting them. I wish I had the referrals. Now, that may change over the years when I get to my next magical guest today, because we got plans for training people, and that would really, really change the environment out there. And your requests for referrals, if they do anything, they inspire me to want to train people who at least will be getting acknowledgement that you can see from them that, yes, they've been trained, they've gotten a certain amount of understanding of empathy and caring and relationship and the things that go into helping a human being through emotional stress and crises and confusions. But now the best I can do is say, go to www.empathictherapy.org or .com and, see who you can find there, but we don't have a good resource at this point for people we know and trust to do a good, solid therapy job or to help you come off meds or things like that. But we're working in that direction. We're working in that direction. I want to express my gratitude for at the start of our second show, taking callers, for the great callers we had on the first show, and I repeated it last week. I was away at a lawsuit, legal, and we still don't have the outcome of that case. But again, I'm just cooking away here with so many, many different activities right now that are out there trying to make this a better place for all of us. Within the very, very best of my ability. We have our breaking news and information website, not website, but web page set up on Breggin.com. So if you go there and you get down to second, it's just the second on the left line down on Breggin.com, and that'll be the backup information for our feature, which I'm going to jump right into, of breaking news and information. And one of the biggest things that has been evolving within our field within the last few months, even more, but the last few years, has been the idea that antidepressants simply don't work, that they're no better than a placebo, and they're a lot more poisonous. So there's a new study out that was claiming by a fellow named Cipriani, claiming antidepressants work. They really do. They really do. And they have to do that now because all the data is the other direction. I put that study up for you on Breaking News and Information. It's also up on my resource center for antidepressants, which is www.123antidepressants.com. 123antidepressants.com. And we've got some of the answers from other people. One in a real establishment source, Medscape Psychiatry, published an article exposing the false claims and ending up with antidepressants don't work. This is on a major psychiatric website. Then we've got some blogs or reports done by Peter Gercha from the Council for Evidence-Based Medicine, Evidence-Based Psychiatry, and a report by Joanna Moncrief from Critical Psychiatry, people in Great Britain. There's all these people now writing about antidepressants don't work. So if you want information to convince your family to help you come off these meds and to convince your doctor, or if you want to check things out before you decide what to say to yourself or a friend or a child or anyone else about these matters, you can go right to Breaking News and Information and get the latest commentary on antidepressants don't work. They're no better than placebo, sugar pill, and they're a lot worse in terms of the pain and suffering they cause. And I've got a few different things there that with my wonderful assistant, Ian, we have put together for you to look at. And we're going to do that every week. It really is going to be a Breaking News and Information site. I want to highlight just one in particular, which is that farmers are killing themselves in staggering numbers. And the rate of suicide among people in farming and also the fishing industry was about 84 per 100,000. That is about five times the usual rate of suicides. And the first thing that occurred to me that relates so much to our work is that I wouldn't be surprised if the fishing and forestry industry has a lot of exposures to neurotoxins, and I know the farming industry does. And I'm not sure these are on bad economic times, which is another reason that the men in particular in their middle years kill themselves. They do in bad economic times when they feel like they're failing their families and to support them. And I asked Ian to check this out some more. And sure enough, the CDC lists the neurotoxic exposure that people get in these industries. And I'm not sure whether it was particularly farming or both the industries. I'll check that out. But you can go check it out. And the headline is Farmers in America Are Killing Themselves in Staggering Numbers. And certainly farmers have heavy neurotoxic exposures. Antidepressants are neurotoxins. They elevate the suicide rate. They become a serious risk factor for suicide, the harm they do to the human brain, and so do other neurotoxins. They just don't enable us to live well. They give us bizarre feelings, hopelessness, despair, and weird neurological reactions that make us feel we're going crazy. So that's Breaking News and Information for today, and please do go to it. And remember now, we're doing call-ins. So what do? You call in, please. And we're going to be doing nutritional questions as well as other questions today. And the call-in number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And Pam Popper, are you there?
I am here.
Folks, this is Pam Popper. You've met her before. You're going to meet her again. She's a huge part of my life, and she's become a huge part of my patients' lives and my family's lives. She is the president of the Wellness Forum Health. Wellness Forum Health. You can find her on Facebook. You can Google and get me and her doing things together. And I'm co-sponsoring her conference. What's the date of that conference, Pam?
It's November 9th through 11th And we are going to have a most unusual conference for two things. I mean, our conferences are always amazing. You know, because you're a presenter, you help make them amazing, right? But yes. this year, people who come are going to be much more active participants. Like after last year, it was so amazing, but I thought, you know what? Here's what happens. You listen to somebody speak who says wonderful things, and then you take notes, and we take questions. Five people get to ask questions, and we have to go on to the next speaker. And you do that for a few days, and then you go home. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could have all of the speakers, like you and Eileen and Mary Marshall, all of our amazing speakers, would do some talks, and then we would have panel discussions, and then we could have breakout sessions where everybody gets to get more hands-on, actually participating in the things that we're talking about during the main sessions. And so everybody's going to get a chance to choose four breakout sessions where, so for example, if somebody hears your talk and says, boy, I want to know a lot more about this Heart of Being Helpful program because I want to help myself, I want to help other people, then they might choose one of your breakout sessions to spend more time with you. And so that's one thing we're going to do. And then we have Cheryl Atkison as our Saturday night speaker. She's an investigative reporter who's looked into a lot of the issues you and I talk about, and she's going to talk about what she's found. So really amazing time. We always have an amazing time, but this year it's going to be even better.
That's great. That's wonderful. And folks, you can go to Bregan.com, look at the drop-down menu at the top. You know, that's the one that runs right across. And you'll see appearances, one word, appearances. And the only appearance I have listed, it's not my only one, but the only one I have listed is Pam Popper's conference, the Wellness Forum Health's 21st annual conference. I'm co-sponsoring it, November 10th through 12th. You've got a little read more thing that you can plug into. I know this sounds silly giving you this kind of details, but I need those kind of details. Folks, you know my lifespan. Very, very healthy, but it's a long lifespan so far, and it's going to get longer and longer. But you can go right to the website and go and sign up for the November 10th through 12th. So this is good, folks. A lot of good things are going on. I want to tell you just a few things about nutrition and Pam. I referred a patient of mine, a psychiatric patient, because out of nowhere, this wonderful gentleman got a high blood cell count repeatedly and was told he had a chronic form of leukemia, and I sent him to Pam. And He's recovered from it, at least in terms of his blood has returned to normal. I mean, what a blessing. And he was following Pam's diet very, very closely. What a blessing. And my mom, my mother-in-law, who has a number of eye problems, they have stopped progressing. She's 92, but they've stopped progressing. She has macular degeneration, has stopped progressing, and now she's been with us several months eating the way we eat. And, Ginger and I have both lost 35 or more pounds. I'm healthier than I've ever been. I don't take asthma medication anymore. I used to take it every single day during the spring and the summer and the fall and most of the winter. And I've had older things that I just assumed went with being older, and a lot of them, they're just gone. So this matters. This eating well matters. My wife, Ginger, she recovered from ulcerative colitis due to Pam. And boy, she was a reluctant experimenter because, when you have ulcerative colitis, you've tried everything. And when she saw how well I was doing and that she was feeding me, and that it was actually relatively inexpensive way to eat, and there weren't any, God, you got to take this supplement and that. It was just healthy eating and healthy living. Pam is just spreading wonderful stuff everywhere, and I love her and admire her. And we're working on training courses. One is already that... I still haven't put it up on my website, but there's but you can go to PAM. And where should they go to get my training course if they want to sign up for it, the one that's already finished and up?
Yeah, go to the Wellness Forum Institute. That's our school, because the program that we have is for is why and how to withdraw from psychiatric drugs, and that's offered through the Institute. So you go to wellnessforuminstitute.com. And you can see the course catalog there. And you can always email me, too, pampopper@msn.com, because a lot of times people want to talk about it, and I'm happy to set up a time to discuss. And soon we'll have information about the new course, The Heart of Being Helpful. I'm so excited about that, because we need lots. You know, you started out when you started today, you were talking about not having referral networks and all that sort of thing. And it will be a long time before you have referral networks, and then you get into how are you going to vet the people. But the more tools we can give people for helping themselves, the less they need a referral network. And so I'm so excited about what we have coming up soon.
Yeah, you can see that we are really doing a lot of good things that are going to affect folks. And this course that's already up there, Why and How to Stop Taking Psychiatric Drugs, is a real critique of psychiatry, very educational, but it's got a lot in it about how to help yourself too, because there's like 28 hours or something of me.
28 hours of you, and then 80 more hours of other stuff too. So it's a I hate to say meaty course. It's sort of it's just a real substantial course. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you can actually use it for college credit if you could convince the college, right? Because you're developing your own college, Pam, and people can do that, can't they?
Yes, absolutely.
How would somebody take it and get college credit somewhere at a college where they could actually graduate from?
Yeah, the problem is this type of programming is really dicey in an academic environment because, as you know, because you've spoken about this a lot, academic environments are really conflicted. So much of the funding comes from the companies that make the stuff we're talking about, you know, and this is the same thing in medical centers. When you're talking about using food as medicine, it's kind of bad for business, you know. Most medical centers, their bread and butter procedures are cardiac, you know, bypass surgery and stents and that sort of thing. So, you know, inexpensive. It's very inexpensive to change your health with diet, as you know, and it interferes with commerce. So, that's why we keep having to set up our own things, start our own school, set up our own company. If I thought I could function inside of somebody else's environment, it sure would be easier. But boy, it's a tough thing to do right now. I have great hopes that it'll change, but right now we're sort of out there on our own.
Okay, well, it's a tremendous learning experience. Now again, call in 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let me talk a bit about nutrition and good health. You know, good health is a matter of exercise. Summer is here, so I more naturally exercise now because I'm doing gardening. But I've also got a machine, and when I'm not doing heavy gardening, I'll do my elliptical type of exercise. I'm walking a lot, though I'm doing now. I'm toting things around the garden and doing stuff like that. So exercise is so important. Then, of course, good. Mental well-being is so important. And the third leg is nutrition. Now, nutrition is not what most people think. It's not a matter of taking a precursor for serotonin and going along with the pipeline from the industry that says you've got a serotonin imbalance, even though you think you're going to now do it natural with some serotonin enhancer or whatever. We're talking about eating well, eating the way human beings were meant to eat. Eating as evolution intended us to eat. And we got enough people out there that if we were in a giant hall, we'd be getting tons of questions. But folks aren't ready for that yet. But, you know, get used to it now. So second show taking callers. We ended up with great ones. So call in. You're not going to have to wait a long time. 888-874-4888. Think instead of you're on a radio, you're in this giant theater with, you know, hundreds of people. And, I mean, there you are. So call in. So raise your hand and call in. Now, the basis of good eating, almost all scientific people agree. And Pam is a scientist. She's a scientist like me. Her books are documented. Her courses are documented. And the starting point, you know, is to eat a plant-based diet. That's the starting point. You've heard it before, but it's real. That's the starting point. Another starting point you've heard before is, you know, don't eat a lot of manufactured. What is that called, Pam? It's all manufactured food. I always forget the word for that.
Processed.
What is that?
Processed foods.
Yeah, processed. Don't eat a lot of processed food. You know, if you got a strain to read the ingredients, probably not a good thing. No dairy. One of my other extended family members, you know, had stomach aches and pains and irregular gut and some other aches and pains. And she started on this, and the hardest part for her was, I love dairy, I love cheese. Well, when she listened to me and stopped, it has changed her health. Just changed her health. So no dairy and avoid fatty stuff, even fatty vegetable products. In particular, for more than just the fatty reasons, avoid the oils. And I mean, that's like the basic idea, but let me give it to Pam and let her talk about this in a more intelligent fashion. Pam.
Oh, I think you are doing just fine. You could come sit in my office and talk to the people I talk to every day. Yeah.
Pam, I've introduced this into my practice now, and because of taking people off drugs, you know, you got to be in good condition. But in general, if you're healthier, you're going to be happier while we work on the emotional problems.
Exactly. Well, you know, something that I've always thought is I think that, you know, there are a lot of doctors prescribing psychiatric drugs who aren't psychiatrists, family practice docs, OB-GYNs, internists. So how do they end up prescribing the drugs? And here's what I've observed over time. People will walk into a doctor's office and, how are you doing? Well, I don't know. I'm tired. I'm not sleeping well. I don't have any energy. I don't feel like doing anything. Well, doesn't that sound a lot like depression? Well, you know what that also sounds like? Being dehydrated, not eating well, skipping meals, being overweight, being sedentary. I mean, the symptoms, many times the symptoms of not taking very good care of yourself sound a lot like depression. And so in the 7-minute doctor visit, the doctor says, gosh, it sounds like you're a little under the weather there. I bet a little Prozac would help you. And it does. It just numbs the person out, as you know. But I'm convinced that a lot of the misdiagnoses are the 7-minute visit with the symptoms of just not taking care of yourself being mistaken for depression. And there's a lot of information. I was shocked when I started looking for it, about how eating a plant-based diet not only makes you feel much better, as you've seen, more energy, you sleep well, we're like Energizer bunnies. Even I'm 62, you're 82. We act like we're 22, right, in terms of what we get done every day. So there's some obvious benefits from the standpoint of all of those things. But you also feel differently from a mental standpoint when you feel good. You know, it's great to get stuff done, but it's also great to have energy and sleep like a log and that kind of thing. So anyway, you made a comment that I wanted to follow up on when you said people aren't necessarily ready for the message, and we still have people saying food really can't be medicine. It can't be that simple. Well, just think about it this way. The average adult in the United States eats a ton of food, one ton each year, every single year. Now, if you were to look at what a ton of food would look like if somebody came and dumped it in your front yard, it wouldn't fit in your front yard, actually, a ton of food. So think of it this way. How could you put a ton of anything through your body and have it not have an impact, good or bad, one or the other, right? So food really has an impact because of the sheer volume of how much of it we consume, and it can either be a positive impact or a negative impact depending upon the choices. And as you mentioned, the more you get over to the plant-based side of it, the lower the fat, the higher the fiber, the more whole foods and the less processed foods you eat, getting the dairy out of the diet for a variety of reasons, the better off you're going to be. And so hence we see people like the patient that you were discussing, even with the conditions like cancer, it often gets better when you change the food. So it's exciting because it's low tech. Everybody can do it. Everybody can afford it. We're all eating anyway. And I think it's the new frontier in medicine, really. And at some point in time, the medical profession will have to embrace it, because I think consumer pressure will cause that to happen. People would much rather eat well than take drugs and have procedures, I think, if they know really what the options are and how they work.
Pam was an important part of a very famous, millions have seen this video called Forks Over Knives. And one of the things that was so striking was the cardiovascular results. And maybe you could talk some about that. The wonderful surgeon who decided surgery wasn't the answer anymore at the Cleveland Clinic. But what it takes, folks, is leaving your colleagues behind and leaving tons of money behind to make these changes from within the profession. That's why there isn't a lot going on. But could you talk about that a little bit, or anything else about cardiovascular?
The key is, if you take a look at the two diseases that are killing Americans and everybody in westernized countries. I mean, if you and I were doing this radio show in Hungary, I mean, Hungary's eating patterns are kind of similar to ours, same disease rates, right? So what's killing people in westernized countries is cardiovascular disease and diabetes, and the reality patients in Forks Over Knives had one or both of those things, and they both get better quickly when people convert to the right diet. Now, Dr. Esselstyn is the guy that you're referring to at Cleveland Clinic. His situation is more unusual than many, because he started putting people on a low-fat, plant-based diet in 1985, and he's been following them ever since. And so you and I have talked often about the fact that such studies are conducted for very short periods of time. 6 months. 6 months is ridiculously long. 8 to 12 to 16 weeks is normal. So here's a guy who's following his patients now for over 31 years and checking in with them to see about their state of health and that sort of thing. And so his original patient group, he's been following for 31 years, and then he's following all the rest of them as they came along as well. And his published research, he's published journal articles in the medical journals, have shown he's never lost a compliant patient to heart disease in 31 years. Now, that's pretty incredible to think about, but I'll make it even more incredible. In the original group, the original 24 patients that he took in 1985, five of those patients were told that they had terminal coronary artery disease. In other words, their very expert cardiologists had sort of thrown up their hands and said, well, you've had bypass surgeries, we've done stents, we've used up all the drugs we can use, and I don't really have any other answers for you. Your chest pain is back, so go home and get your affairs in order. And, you know, all five of those patients lived for a long time. Four are still alive, and one of them died in December of 2016, 31 years after she was told she wouldn't live until the end of 1985. So it takes your breath away. And so here's something I think that's an interesting perspective about all of this. I've written often about the fact that what we have in a doctor's office is often the collision of low expectations on both sides. It's a terrible thing. Patients do not show up in a doctor's office thinking they're going to get cured. And doctors don't learn in school how to cure anybody. I didn't. You know, now I went to naturopathic school. They didn't teach us how to fix anything. And so everybody just manages disease, and people get sick while they take more drugs. And here is this guy at Cleveland Clinic who has kept terminal patients alive for 31 years. No more events, no more drugs, just eating well. And it's the story that should be on the front page of the New York Times, and it isn't. So it's good that we pay attention to it in situations like this.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me so much going to the initial conferences, see, I met Pam because Pam was reading my stuff, and she got in touch with me and said, I mean, you know, hold nutritional conferences. We talk about good food. You know, I want you to come. And I've been to some of those, and they were always selling something, some other quacky thing, to be blunt. And But when I went to Pam's conference, one of the things I realized was that she was doing exactly, but in some ways on a grander and better scale than me, she was doing the same thing in nutrition. And that she had a better business sense, a better maybe organizational sense of some things that just brought a lot into my life, like these courses that are becoming available and are already available on her website. Pam Popper again, folks. Pam Popper. Don't forget that. It's not an easy name to forget. Pam Popper, P-O-P-P-E-R. Well, listen, I'm losing track, and I'm just going to bring on a caller. And can we have Susan from Santa Monica? She has a question about amino acids, and that would definitely be for you.
Okay.
Are you there, Susan?
I'm here.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Thank you. You know, Dr. Popper, I have heard that I get right to my question. Some people promote amino acids supplementation when people are going off psychiatric drugs. What do you think about that opinion?
Well, I've done a lot of research on the use of amino acids and other types of nutritional supplements, magnesium supplements, and there's a lot of discussion about that kind of thing. Actually, all of those nutrients are available in abundance if you just convert to a plant-based diet. So if you take and I'll give you an example. There are people who prescribe specific amounts of, say, magnesium. And they say, look, if a person who's trying to get off of psychiatric drugs and is having trouble because they have leg cramps and all kinds of other things, so give them magnesium pills, and that makes things better. Well, if you look at the amount of magnesium that's being suggested, you're eating several times that if you just eat a plant-based diet, and it's cheaper to do and it's safer to do because magnesium has some negative side effects when you take it as an individual nutrient. So do amino acids, and so do all dietary supplements. In fact, I've written a lot about this. The dietary supplements you have to be the most careful of are the ones that work, because one thing we know about human physiology is you can't manipulate one system in the body without changing others. That's why all drugs have side effects. So I think that unless there's a specific indication for an isolated nutrient, and those are not common, really, the best thing to do is to show people how to get all of their nutrients from food. And by the way, one other thing that I'll just mention along that line, there are now, we have identified about 100,000 nutrients in food, and we still discover new ones all the time. And so a multivitamin or a nutrition label talks about 17 of them. Well, what about the other 999,900 and some? You know, so we focus on a handful of nutrients, and we ignore the fact that the combination of all of those nutrients is really what builds health, and you're best off to eat those things in the packages nature delivers them in: apples, bananas, broccoli, rice, potatoes, and et cetera.
I started after meeting Pam to read more and more about supplements. And even in the basic scientific literature, you read summaries from the AMA and so on, and they're going to say there's just the science behind any supplements is not good. It just isn't good. And surprisingly, taking things in the form of supplements can be harmful. I take two supplements. One, B12, because I really am not eating a lot of the food that B12 comes in. And I'm going to be interested in what Pam says about this. And it was the only thing that my very thoughtful internist said about the diet. It's not even the diet, about my eating right, because I'm eating right. The only thing he said was be sure to take the B12 because you're not going to be getting that. The other thing was, as I take vitamin D, and the reason I do that is because I'm in a northern climate. I put on every day I put on some amount of sunblock because I've had a few things I needed taken off my face that I don't want coming back. And nothing serious, folks. I am fine. So I'm sunblocking. And when I go out, I have long sleeves on. And even when I garden, I stay pretty well covered up. So those are the only two things I concluded there was any justification at all for taking as a supplement. And Pam, what do you think about that?
Well, the first thing I'll say about B12 is that one of the reasons why we have to take B12 supplements, even if you, because you eat a vegan diet, which I do and you're pretty close to that, is because of sanitation, which we are grateful for. I mean, we don't want to go back to the days when people got cholera. But we used to drink water from streams and rivers. You can't do that now, of course, for obvious reasons. But we had exposure to bacteria that way, and we didn't use to sterilize food as much as we do now. So the vegan eater just a few decades ago got enough bacteria, because B12 grows on bacteria, that you didn't have to worry about it. But now that we have made a lot of strides in sanitation, it's made it necessary for people who don't eat any animal foods to take a little B12. And you only need like 2.4 micrograms a day, so a low-dose supplement a couple times a week is fine. I'll give you the other side of the vitamin D issue. Vitamin D is not a vitamin. It's a hormone. And the definition of a vitamin is something that your body cannot produce, and therefore it must be consumed in food. So humans don't make vitamin C. We have to eat it in food, okay? So the first thing is, nobody goes around saying, well, how much testosterone should I eat every day? Because we know that the body produces it. Nobody's saying, gosh, I think I'll go out and look for some foods that contain estrogen. Our bodies produce it. Insulin, what can I eat that has insulin in it? So it's important to understand that, because it goes to some of the problems with vitamin D that aren't being talked about.
What is that noise?
No, it's been going on for a long time.
is that Pam? Susan, are you still on? Maybe it's on Susan.
I'm sorry.
It's been going on since before Susan. So here's the thing. When you go out in the sun, your body produces 10,000 or so photoproducts, including 10 known types of vitamin D. And so the first thing is, in this reductionist world we live in, because just like we think you can take magnesium pills and not eat food, we think people can take vitamin D pills and avoid the sun. And that's not necessarily the case, because you're simply not getting the same benefit. And studies have been very clear on the fact that lower vitamin D levels with sun exposure is better than higher vitamin D levels without it. And the research is also pretty clear that skin cancer patients survive longer when they're exposed to the sun. We could do a whole show on this, because this is one of those completely misunderstood topics. So I'm going to give you two very brief statements about vitamin D. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force says, we have no reliable testing methods for vitamin D. The error rate's about 60 to 80%. We have no idea what ideal vitamin D levels are. We have no idea how much vitamin D you have to take to raise your plasma levels. We do not know how much you're storing in your fat tissues when you do that. The benefits of vitamin D are few and far between for almost the entire populations. There are known risks of taking vitamin D. Recommend against testing and supplementation. And then a group did a huge meta-analysis in 2016, and their study concluded that the evidence against vitamin D testing and supplementation is now so huge that it is statistically impossible for future research to change it. To change the outcome. So there's lots of detail. I have like 6 hours of slides on vitamin D, but that's the short story. So we're very clear on one thing. We don't want anybody to burn their skin. But we're also clear that humans need sunshine, and it's always been outsourced to sun exposure. If we were supposed to consume it orally, it would be in food. It would have to have been in food, or we couldn't have survived as a species. And if you live in a northern climate, you store it for use in the winter. So that's my story on vitamin
D. So, Pam, I should be wearing short pants and short sleeves and no sunblock on my arms and legs, maybe? I don't have any problems with my arms and legs.
Well, here's the thing. You do have to be careful about burning. So in April, when it starts to be kind of nice around here, I get out in the sun and I'm real careful to only spend maybe 15 or 20 minutes and a little bit to turn the color of the skin. But again, burning is a bad idea. 100% agreement on that. And then over time, I gradually increase my time that I can spend in the sun. By August, I'm at about an hour to two, depending on the time of day. And then after that, I'm either wearing long sleeves or I'm sitting under, I've got a great big umbrella on my deck at home and on my patio up at north, my house up north. And so I'm sitting under an umbrella or I'm in the shade or I'm covered up or I'm inside. So I don't allow myself to have unlimited exposure to the sun, but I do finish the season with a nice tan. That's been very gradually acquired over a six-month period of time.
Folks, 888-874-4888. Call in. You've got, I believe, the best nutritionist in the universe.
Oh,
on the phone to ask a question. And, of course, a dear friend and you mentor me in a lot of areas. I guess we mentor each other, which is really quite remarkable. So 888-874-4888. This is an enormous chance to call in. And I know the show is interesting, and maybe you don't want to disrupt it by calling in. But more and more, I want audience participation in this show. I want you calling in. I want you asking things. And if it's off nutrition but on point for the kinds of things we talk about, that's okay, too. And let me know, get in touch with me at the Breggin Live at hotmail.com, Breggin Live at hotmail.com, and let me know what you think about having callers, and let me know, what you think about the new format we've been developing, because I just think it's terrific, and I think it's absolutely a great thing. So, call in 888-874-4888, or you'll kick yourself in 20 minutes when you can't call. Well, 15 minutes, really, because the show will come when you can't call in anymore. Pam, let's talk some more about your thinking and my thinking of this new direction we're going in, with the course we're going to give in the fall, it's going to start, and we're just evolving it. And we'd actually be interested in some feedback on that too. You could give again by going to BreggenLive@hotmail.com. I deeply believe that there shouldn't be all this licensure of people talking to people to help one another. Human beings, since the start of evolution, language, and maybe probably before language, were helping each other. I'm sure they were before language, helping each other survive. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Many, many animals without language help each other survive, and they help it with nurturing and love and care and teaching and directing. I have a backyard full of creatures and deer, big deer and little deer, birds feeding birds, and daddy cardinals. I saw a daddy cardinal today feeding a little cardinal, little nondescript cardinal. I mean, creatures help each other, but what we've done is we have stifled people helping people. We've set up rules and regulations about what you can say you're going to help somebody with. God forbid you think you can actually help somebody get over depression. Do you dare advertise that? I can help people get over depression. I mean, it gets pretty dicey. You certainly can't say, well, I do psychotherapy too. And I'm going to teach you how. We're all going to do it together. It all gets parsed up into licensing, and nobody stops to think that, wait a minute, we're licensing conversation. We're licensing helpful conversations. Does that make sense? Where does it make sense? Where doesn't it make sense? So Pam and I, we're going to do a course based on the book title, the title of one of my books, The Heart of Being Helpful. And the first part of the course is going to be for everybody who wants to be helpful to themselves and other people. And then if you want to use it in a more systematic or organized or professional way, maybe you want to call yourself a coach, maybe you're already a licensed person, then the second half of it would be for you who wants to either make a living or do this in a more systematic way, even as a volunteer, where you actually need to know more about the limit setting and the ethics and so on and so forth. So it's going to be a two-part course right now. That seems to be the way we're going. And the whole idea is people helping people with conversation should not be licensed. It should be something that you look at what is the person's training and experience. And do they have lots of people on their website saying it's really great and using their names to say so? Do you have good ratings for the people who are writing into your website or whatever, word of mouth? And there are licensed professions, and if folks want to learn the heart of being helpful, the essence of it, the principles of it, the value of it, and so on, then professionals will be able to take the course. But non-professionals as well will be able to take both parts one and two, as we're looking at it right now. But because we believe that anybody should be able to learn to help your child. Let's say one of the calls I get, is my 24-year-old son is at home. He's been labeled schizophrenic. He's on multiple drugs. Shouldn't that mother be able to take a course that will inform her how to talk to somebody who's got that awful label? Maybe he does see things or hear things that other people don't. Shouldn't she get the best direction on relating and talking with her son? Now that's never assumed. Maybe if she's lucky, she'll be allowed to come into a couple of the son's sessions. Rarely, except with the really knowledgeable therapist, they're going to say, family therapy, only 24, you're living at home, get mom, dad, the other sibs in, let's talk, let's work this out, let's get you a lot of help and love and a better environment. So that's the premise that I'm working on, and Pam is really empowering this direction, and I'd just like to have you make some comments about that.
Yeah, well, you did such a good job of framing the issue. When you think about it, I think all of us have had situations. I'm 62. By my age, you've had plenty of friends who went through divorces or bankruptcies or lost a job or something didn't work out or a parent died. And the first thing that you think about this for a minute, when a friend calls and, a girlfriend of mine sobbing about something, you don't sit there and say, oh, I don't have a license to help you. I don't think I'm qualified to help you. You know what you do? You get in the car and you drive to her house and you say, big hug, sit down, tell me what's going on, let me be a listener. That's instinctively what people do. Let me help. Let me just be there. And a lot of it is just being there. And then, of course, if you know a few things to say that are comforting or a way to have some dialogue that might help the person feel better, then that's good too. But the whole idea that specialized training is needed to help somebody who's upset, depressed, anxious, feeling out of sorts about things is a little silly when you think about it, because like you said, we've all been helping each other since the beginning of our time on the planet. I think one of the things that we wrote in our outline is that we all know that being there is important and it's helpful. But if you'd just like to be able to do more, you say, I wish I had a few more tools in my toolbox because I'm a little out of my wheelhouse in this area. I think that this is what this course will do. And it can all come from personal experience, really. When you start to look at your own life experience, it's really informative and instructive about things that you might say to somebody else. It just teaches you how to be with other people in a different sort of way. And so there will always be a need for people who can deliver great therapy. This is, we're not proposing that isn't the case, but there's a lot that can be done short of that. And since there are not scads of great therapists, I mean, finding a good therapist is sometimes challenging. That's why people are calling you, by the way, and saying, please send me to somebody. I think we can help a lot by just teaching people to be more present and empathic and helping one another in this way that we're discussing. And we can heal the world in this way. You know, really, when you think about it, if everybody wasn't so distressed all the time, if we could get everybody to eat well and not be so distressed all the time, how would the planet change in the next few years? In amazing sorts of ways, I think. So it's wonderful one-on-one. It's wonderful one person at a time. But it's a great vision for humanity that we could heal our physical diseases through eating, and we could heal a lot of our emotional difficulties by just being more available and present and helpful to each other.
It's amazing to it's just amazing to have you in my life and have us working together on these issues. I think we're going to make a big difference. And folks, I'm just reaching out more and more. I'm going to be just doing more and more things with more and more people, but a bedrock is going to be what Pam and I do together. And I just profoundly believe that, I've just seen it now in my own life. Nutrition, how we eat, and how we live emotionally are so closely related. And, you know, one of the things about changing to eat in the right way, and certainly for me it was this, it was a decision to stop kidding myself, stop enabling my worst habits, stop having one area that I wasn't going to clean up in this lifetime. I actually used to say to myself, next lifetime, I'm going to do what I believe is moral, because I actually believe that cutting down on killing animals for food is a moral thing to do. It's also better for the environment. Raising animals is not good for the environment, and it's also punishing the animals in a lot of ways. And so I always said to myself, next lifetime, but not now. Well, what was I saying to myself? I mean, was I seriously saying to myself that my life was not worth doing, one of the most important things I could do for myself on an ethical plane and on a health plane? Well, yeah, that's just what I was saying. I was saying, look at me, I work so hard, I do so much, I accomplish all this and that and the other, and that's my excuse, and I'm just, next lifetime, I'm going to take better care of my body and what I eat, and also meet my ethical standards a little more highly in this area of my relationship to animals and creatures and stuff. And don't do that. Don't make my mistake. I mean, I'm very blessed with genetics that I was, and also somewhat reasonable eating, that I was as healthy as I was when I met Pam. And I didn't even think there was much room for improvement. But there's so many little things that get quirky when you get older, you don't even think about it. So let me tell you, there's been a lot of health improvement since I started eating right. And there's a lot better feeling about the birds and the creatures and the deer who come through my yard, as I'm cutting way, way back on eating meat, and I'm not a vegan, but I'm getting really close to that. And maybe I won't. Maybe I'll always eat a little fish. I don't know. But don't put it off. Don't put off the three things, the exercise, the eating well, and making a determined effort to improve your emotional health. Whether or not you're on psychiatric drugs, I think that our course that you can get, Why and How to Stop Taking Psychiatric Drugs, could be helpful to you. And I think my book, Heart of Being Helpful, could be good for you. Pam, what do you think is your best introductory books? Let people know a bit about that.
I think Food Over Medicine. I mean, that's what we've been talking about. Food Over Medicine is really a lot of what my life is all about. A couple of things I just have to say before we run out of time. When you were talking about we mentor each other, the thing that came to mind is how many times in a given week I quote you when I'm teaching a class, when I'm sitting with a client, when I'm having a staff meeting, when we're talking about our conference, when I'm just having a conversation with a friend. I quote you all the time. You've made just a huge impact on everything that I do. And the other thing is when you were talking about, making the decision to take care of yourself, you know, when people are really sick, they get motivated to take care of themselves. But, you know, health is not just the absence of sickness. Health is really taking care of yourself so that you live until you die and that you have the energy and the mental capacity to do all the things that you want to do. And sometimes people don't really realize that their health is diminishing. It happens so gradually over a period of time that they are not really aware of the fact that they've lost half of their capacity for life and for everything that they want to do. So you don't have to wait till you get sick to do this. You want to do it now so that you don't get sick. And I don't know whose phrase this is. I would give credit if I knew, but a person, I found this somewhere, live long and die short. So you just live, and then one day you go to bed, and you just don't get up when you're 99 or 100, you know? And I think that's what we'd all like to do, but you have to invest in maintaining yourself if you're going to get there.
Well, my concepts are even changing about 99 and 100. You know, Jean, my mother-in-law, who was part of our threesome team and family, is 93. I want her around for a lot more than 7 years. As I start pushing toward 100, you know, I want to go on, and there's so much to share, so much love to share, so much knowledge to share. I'm just so glad that you're really, I'm certain you're going to enable me continually to have a better, healthier life on this earth. And I just want to share that with people. I know you all are mostly listening to me about the psychology and psychiatric issues, and that's going to be most of what the shows are about, unless Pam is on. But Pam's going to be on a bit. So I want to get feedback from you, how you feel about it. I'd like to specifically get feedback to BreganLive@hotmail.com. How do you feel about having Pam on talking about nutrition with me, as well as all the other things that we get together about, she and I, and including psychology and, you know, today I laced in thoughts about my own psychology and well-being and how not to be. How to do it now rather than putting off your health. How to just do it now and make most of it. Let me know what you think about the format. Let me know what you think about the callers. Because I want more and more wonderful callers joining us on this show. Love you folks out there. Love you, Pam Popper, my wonderful guest, Pam Popper.
Love you too, Peter Bregan.
Okay, dear. We'll be in touch with all of you and me and Pam as well. Bye-bye now.